Blog Talk Radio.
Something happened to me last Thursday when I was driving home. I had a couple of miles to go.
I looked up and saw a glowing orange object in the sky to the east. It was moving very irregularly. Suddenly, there was intense light all around me. When I came to,
welcome, Strange Shrouds to your universe. I got a great show. I'm bringing on David Chase. He's an illustrator of the unexplained, researcher, does a bunch of other stuff. Let's bring him on. Hey, David.
Hey. I'm here.
I appreciate you coming on, man. I really do.
Yeah. Glad to show up. I'm glad to be here.
Now, I heard about you from, first of all, in the Reach group, but I seen that you was illustrating and drawing different people's abductions or experiences, I should say. And so tell me about that, David.
Yeah, I mean, basically, I draw aliens. That's what I want to know is what do aliens look like, or extraterrestrials, or whatever you wish to call them, UFO occupants, the beings seen in these encounters or abduction experiences.
Very nice. Now, how long have you been doing this?
Pretty much, the first time I met a contactee, experiencer, abductee, and, you know, you could go into a whole discussion on what term to call people. I think she prefers the term contactee. Garnett Doonan was a woman I met back in 1991 at a UFO discussion group. It was actually a monthly meeting of the UFO Contact Center International, which was held in Federal Way, Washington, hosted by Eileen Garut. And so that was the first time I met and actually got to work with a contactee to actually do drawings based on their descriptions. So basically, that's 1991. That's like 23 years, something, 24 years. Yeah, quite a while.
That's quite some time. But so tell me about what's your expertise in your research? What is your forte, so to speak?
Yeah, well, definitely. Kind of the anatomy. Are you there? Okay, I heard a click. The anatomy. Okay. The anatomy, appearance, and biology of UFO occupants. I mean, in high school, I took biology and AP biology, and I was kind of focused on that stuff, you know. And of course, I was very interested in physics and astronomy and so forth too, but I didn't have a really strong mathematical background, so I kind of ended up focusing in more on biology. And then in college, I got a bachelor's degree in biology, concentrating in ecology, evolution, and behavior. And so in college, I took courses on subjects like island biogeography, which is, you know, how basically how life gets distributed between different islands and how it evolves when it gets there. And also courses on evolution and the fossil record and genetics and all of that kind of stuff and ecology. So basically I've taken all that knowledge and all the knowledge of anatomy and so forth that comes from that and then applied it to trying to understand what aliens look like.
So far, what has your research proved?
I guess I can't really say I've proved anything. The proof that people are looking for, you know, that smoking gun, the flying saucer on the White House lawn, or the you know the the definite alien artifact.
I should say any similar, you know, experience that's similar.
Well, definitely. What I've come up with is a lot of commonalities in descriptions. So, you know, I think the research is valuable in terms of being able to find out what people have experienced, what people are reporting, and generally then if you meet other experiencers, a lot of them are going to describe similar things. So that's kind of, you know, it's in that sense, it's kind of predictive. You've had a UFO experience and you've seen this kind of being, and then you meet someone else, and then they say, well, then you can kind of guess what the being might have looked like that they've seen, or at least it would be one from these basic categories, which are come up again and again. I recently wrote an article that I did for Ray Hernandez and his group, the Foundation for Research into Extraterrestrial Encounters, and the article was titled Five Common Types of ETs and What They Look Like. And so in that article, I talked about the grays, the reptilians, the insectoids, which includes primarily praying mantis types, but some other insect-like creatures, the Nordics and other human-looking beings, and hybrids. And, of course, there are many other types. There are light beings, and there are things that are hairy, you know, like a Bigfoot or a Littlefoot in some cases, and some of them are short. And then there are a variety of other, like, robots and weird types that just come up in rare occasions, but not very often.
Oh, yeah. I was familiar with the article you did, right? And, you know, I was familiar with all the, you know, the Nords and the reptilians and stuff like that, but the insectoids is the ones I've read a little bit on it, but I've really not been totally, I haven't, a lot of research that's brought me there, you know?
Yeah, well, the insectoids are not talked about as much as, say, the grays, but very often in abduction experiences, there's, you know, a taller being who seems to be in charge, and often it's a tall gray, but sometimes in the background there'll be something that resembles a praying mantis, and sometimes the praying mantis will come up and interact with the abductee and stare into their eyes, or you know, something along those lines, or actually perform some of the medical type procedures. So there are the ones that look like praying mantises. There are, you know, several different variations on them. I don't think I've come with any two praying mantis types from different experiencers that look exactly the same, but certainly there are some very common aspects to the descriptions. They tend to have, you know, they tend to lean, their body posture leans forward very often, kind of like, you know, a praying mantis insect, and their arms, they hold their arms often kind of in that folded position like a praying mantis, and they have a long neck with like segments around it. They have a huge bulbous head with big eyes, kind of a triangular face, and sometimes they have just like a horizontal slit for a mouth, and sometimes they actually have a set of like insect-like mandibles, in some cases, people feel that they are very kind of advanced and loving, and they're like spiritual guides or teachers or something. And in other cases, people feel it's just like a doctor or a being with a very powerful mind that can kind of invade their mind. So different kinds of experiences with those types.
Interesting. That's now yourself, David, have you had any kind of experience with any other beings?
I have no conscious memory of an encounter with anything I would call a UFO occupant or alien. However, I did have in college, I had a sleep paralysis experience, which involved seeing, at the end of my bed, like was where my feet would be, would be next to the door. And on the back of the door, I had a mirror. And I remember lying there one afternoon and looking into the mirror. And in the mirror, I saw on the other side of my room across from me, where my desk was, I saw a shadowy figure standing there about, 5'8" or 6 feet tall, just a man-like form. I kind of studied it and tried to, figure out what is this and could I see a face. And I looked at the face and there were no facial features. There's only what I described from that time as like kind of black charcoal smudged on black construction paper. It was just kind of a nondescript smudge for a face, no discernible features. And so going through my mind at the time, I was wondering, well, what could this be? Is this an alien returning me from an abduction that I don't remember? Or, of course, at the time, I was reading, like, David Jacobs' Secret Life and Whitley Strieber's Communion and Transformation and so forth. So I was familiar with what the alien experience would look like. And I said, well, thinking to myself, why doesn't this look like a gray? It should look like a gray. So, okay, probably not an alien. So maybe if I turn on my side so I can actually face it across the room instead of looking at its reflection in the mirror, then I'll be able to get a more of a handle on what I'm seeing. And so then I tried to move and found I was paralyzed. And then I got scared. There was no fear up until the point that I tried to move and then found I couldn't. And then it seemed like a moment went by, and then then I looked back, I could see back in the mirror and there was no being there, and I looked across the room and there was nothing there. So, whatever that was, it could have been some kind of interdimensional thing. It could have been, some sort of hallucination that the mind produces when it's in this borderline sleep-wake state. But even if it is a hallucination, that doesn't necessarily rule out the possibility that that's just a mechanism the brain uses to see into other dimensions or something like that. So I don't dismiss any possibility as far as what that was.
Of course. I'm totally with you there, David, especially because I've been in that in-between phase, and it feels like you can't move. I mean, total paralysis. I mean, and especially if there's if you're seeing this being or somewhere around you, and then you feel this paralysis, that would not only induce total shock and fear, but just total shock and fear.
Yeah. Well, being unable to move while there's a strange being in your presence, that can create a certain amount of fear.
Oh yeah, for sure. Now I know that there's a heated debate in the reptilian community about the positive and then the negative aspects. Which, whenever there's always a positive, there's always going to be a negative with the positive, to make a full circle, a perfect circle. But, David, with your research and all these encounters, what have you heard the most between the two?
Well, with reptilians, I've heard, I haven't heard a lot of real horror stories or anything like that. I have heard of various cases that were traumatic for the person. Kind of towards the worst end of it are cases where it appears to be an actual rape, which is basically what we would say is non-consensual sexual encounter. The people who've had that experience, do apparently have the physical, after effects that you'd expect after that kind of encounter. So I do believe that's real. Even with regard to sexual experiences with reptilians, they're not all of a negative nature. Some of them are very, very loving. Some people during an encounter receive continuous communication with a being that is, I love you, we've always been together, and they feel this overwhelming sense of unconditional love while the experience is going on. And of course, depending on what their beliefs are about sex outside of marriage or whatever, they may be conflicted about the experience afterwards. It's not like every sexual experience with the reptilian is a negative one. Some of them are very positive. So that's the rape ones are kind of probably the worst that you generally see. But, you know, on the positive end, you have experiences where the reptilian might materialize, and in one case, the reptilian materialized in the room, and the person felt an overwhelming sense of unconditional love just from being in the presence of what seemed to be a spiritually evolved being.
Now these now you're talking about, you know, these sexual these rapes. Was there hybrids made from them sexual encounters that you were told, or any kind of hybrid program there?
That does seem to relate to the hybrid program in some way. Of course, you know, this gets into areas that are really difficult to understand and explain in terms of the biology that we know. Because on Earth, if you try to direct cross two different species, even if they're closely related species, like a horse and a donkey, generally the offspring will be infertile. And so if you have a species that's a reptile and a species that's a mammal and you try to cross them, certainly there's no example on Earth where you can actually do that. But what you can do is... there's, you know, what's called genetic engineering or transgenesis, where you take selected genes from one species and insert them into the genome of another, and you can create a new being that has characteristics of both if you do that. So that's, now, I think the sexual thing may just be something that the reptilians have a connection to a particular person. And it's almost like they're a mate from a past life or something like that coming back to them. So it's more like it's part of that person's star family or part of their soul, their soul's development, that, you know, I believe that our souls, not only can we reincarnate, but we can reincarnate as human or as different types of UFO occupants as well. And, of course, if you take into account the idea of time not really being linear, then all these past lives and future lives that your soul will have are actually going on concurrently.
Yeah, it's interesting. It really is quite interesting. Now, going back to reptilians, I was just wondering that, we figured out that... I know where I was going to tell you. Do you think that, you know, because, you know, sex plays a big power in magic, you know, dark magic, and just a lot of the old magic, you know, and I was going to ask you if do you think there's an occult aspect behind the reptilians and stuff like that?
Well, you know, they talk about, you know, you hear stories about, like, about rituals involving people in hooded robes and whatever. And the reptilians do often wear hooded robes, and there does seem to be a connection between the reptilian encounters and shamanism and ritual. What I do have to remind you is that there are many different species of reptilians and probably many different civilizations or groups of reptilians as well. So, you know, what you see one group doing, it may not reflect what another group does or what they believe or anything like that. But I do think that there's a connection between the alien abduction experience and shamanic initiation experiences. And, of course, that the reptilians being that they sometimes people will see a council of reptilians, sometimes like a council of 12 beings that's come up in, you know, a couple cases. That would mean that, yeah, the hooded robes and the councils and the rituals, there's something to that connection, but I think some people try to make it into a big, scary, evil thing as if it's, you know, yeah, but I don't see it like that. It's just a part of culture, a part of their culture for some of them.
Yeah. No, but what I was going to say, David, is, you know, there's been this occult knowledge, you know, this country that's been built on, you know, Freemasons, and everything's been passed on from the Templars, and before that, you know, there's this shroud of secrecy, and with that secrecy was these rituals, and well, there was these, excuse me, there's a train coming by my apartment, but yeah, okay. there's these rituals, there's these, orders that they have to go through, you know. It's really interesting stuff, and I was just, you know, there's got to be a connection, you know, with that forbidden and secret knowledge tied to the reptilians, and maybe how to incantate them or be able to see them with a naked eye, you know, doing these different rituals and shamanism especially. And, you know, and we talk about in the Book of Enoch, it says only through magic can they be seen, I'm not going to quote it, but it says only through sound can their faces be seen. You know, in the when you go in that shamanism and hermetic science, you're just like, oh, you know, and you're going in deep, but you know, it's going way deeper than that. You know, and you start, and it starts becoming this tone. And you know, I've been around different cultures and different stuff like that, and I think that does a really serious connection. What do you think, Dave?
Yeah.
Well,
I, you know.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, I think that people the UFO occupants generally, not just the reptilians, but in general, are very good at out of body travel, and they can exist in what, for lack of a better term, we would call, you know, an interdimensional state or an astral state or some other state where they can be present invisibly but still be there and observe and so forth. And and certainly I know a lot of people who've connected to them through meditation, sometimes like the chakra visualization techniques and so forth. Meditation will allow people to contact them, or just focusing on a drawing of a particular reptilian, like if you have a name for it or something, that will sometimes allow people to connect to them. And I imagine that, you know, there's been covert interactions between humans and reptilians and other beings for probably throughout history. And I think part of the way that's done might be through through various rituals and so forth. But that's about all I can add there, you know.
Right, man. Glad that we got to cover that. Now, you know a lot about quantum physics, too, don't you?
Say again about
quantum physics. That was one of your things that you was interested in.
Yeah, well, certainly physics in general. I mean, relativity and quantum mechanics, that more of it, like some of the philosophical interpretations of it, like the many world interpretation, which says that, you know, that the universe is sort of splitting into different copies of itself continuously, and that, you know, you're born, and then as you go through life, you kind of break into parallel versions of yourself based on different decisions that you make in different circumstances that manifest in your life. And what I've wondered is, like, if at a point after you die, and after all the different versions of you in the parallel universes die, if they kind of come back together, and there's some form of consciousness that's like your oversoul or something that can somehow hold the memories of all of those different versions of you. And then what about the other lives you live, like past lives and future lives, or what might be called parallel lives? So, you know, the whole idea of connecting, quantum mechanics and the relativity and what it says about the nature of time with the concept of the soul and of reincarnation, and that's an area that really fascinates me. I do sometimes listen to Bashar, who's an extraterrestrial who's channeled by Daryl Anka, and, you know, I don't take everything he says as gospel, but some of what he says certainly on the nature of time and of parallel realities and so forth does kind of resonate with me. It also relates to, there's a gentleman, David Deutsch, is a physicist who wrote a book called The Fabric of Reality. And in that, he introduced time as a quantum concept. And he said, you can imagine that space-time is actually composed of just snapshots of the universe at different moments in time. But the snapshots include not just our universe, or not just our version of the universe, but all the parallel versions of it as well. And so the way our consciousness works, it kind of organizes those snapshots into a stack according to certain causal laws of physics so that things evolve in a consistent way that's understandable to us. Now, one thing Bashar says is that as consciousness kind of evolves, you get to the point where you could actually kind of change some so that there might be things that seem inconsistent. And that's what some of the things like people manifesting things or some of the paranormal types of experiences could be explained by, where the mind will start to organize the snapshots in a slightly different way that might even be experienced maybe through a dream state as shifting into a parallel version of your own life. Whitley Strieber has actually written about becoming aware of other versions of himself. Whitley Strieber, as most know, is the author of Communion and a variety, several books on his abduction and encounter experiences. And he's written about being aware of other versions of his own life. And that certainly, his experiences in that regard are not the only ones that I'm familiar with. Sometimes it comes to people through a dream state. Sometimes it's actually involves some kind of encounter experience that seem to involve the time travel element to it. So there's definitely a lot of implications as far as physics and the nature of the soul and so forth that need to be explored more fully. The subject of missing time is about how, you know, in an abduction experience, typically the beings remove your memory of the experience, so you remember the initial moments and then the moments right after being returned from the encounter. But there's also experiences called gained time, in which someone may, say, be driving and they get to a destination like half an hour before they could have possibly gotten there. So somehow they made a leap that allowed them to it's almost like, I guess, if they traveled backwards in time a half an hour, that could explain how they got there half an hour early. Some people have had gained time in other sorts of situations as well. So the missing time can be understood in terms of memory being manipulated, but the gained time probably would have to involve time itself being manipulated or the person being somehow moved in time.
Yeah, I know if I want to go back in time, I want to make sure I got my Huey Lewis cassette tape in my pocket. but no, man, it's I love the aspects of time travel. Are you familiar with Tegmark?
Tegmark?
I've heard
the name, but I'm not really familiar with him.
Well, there's a book I want to recommend to you. It's Mathematics of Our Universe. I'll have to message you at inbox and make sure I got that right. But it talks about, you know, these different dimensions that we live in and how everything could be different. Like, instead of, like, me scratching my ear right now, like I'm doing something different or something, all these different time things getting played out, but like just a million different options. It's just really mind-boggling. And I was wanting to ask you, while I'm on the subject, is do you think that we will be able to communicate with these beings not on their time but on our time whenever we're able to master these elements in quantum physics and chaos and being able to
Well, as far as being able to communicate them on more of an equal footing, I think I can think of something Richard Dolan said Richard Dolan is, you know, a historian and a writer on UFOs and related subjects, and he talked about, you know, if these other beings are watching our development, then they know, they see our technological development and our scientific knowledge increasing exponentially, and they realize that, in his words, that they see that we're about to leap right into their world. So basically, yeah, we're coming to learn all this stuff that they've probably known for millennia, you know, there'll be a lot of paradigm shakeups and stuff as all this new knowledge about, you know, physics and the nature of reality and so forth comes along, but that there is a point probably in the future where we'd be able to communicate with them more openly, and part of making that happen will be a better understanding of the brain, a better understanding of consciousness, a better understanding of the soul and dimensions and the nature of reality and time and so forth. And that's all coming, I believe. I have a lot of faith in the human future. I think, you know, I see today so much more discussion of UFOs and of paranormal experiences and intelligent discussion of it. Whereas, you know, when I was growing up, it was, you know, heated arguments with skeptics and so forth about, you know, whether this stuff could even be possible. But now, like, a lot of experiencers who've actually experienced these things are starting to share with varying degrees of openness. And then I encourage everyone to choose how open they want to be and who they want to share it with, because basically you have to realize there will be emotional consequences for you for whatever decision you make, but there are definitely rewards to airing your dirty laundry of, yes, I had the abduction experience too, or whatever it is.
Now, we got, if you want, is there anything that anything you'd really like to address tonight, or if you didn't want to we've got a few minutes.
Well, I would like to mention that, yeah, even though I'm not really interested in finding the physical hard proof of, you know, the abductions or the fact that aliens could be actually physical beings, I certainly have seen a lot of photographs of the body marks that these beings leave behind, often like triangles and sometimes claw marks or bruises and stuff. And I've seen not just the photographs, but sometimes the actual marks on people I've known. These beings, these experiences are physical, at least in terms of their effects. And I think it's pretty fair to say that, you know, if you apply Occam's razor and look for the simplest explanation that accounts for all the data, that yes, these are beings who can enter our world as physical beings, and even if there is an interdimensional aspect to them or to their technology, they're just beings who have superior knowledge to us and superior capabilities, and that's kind of my basically what I take on what these beings are. And as far as where they come from, you know, certainly they could be extraterrestrial. They could be, it could be time travelers. It could be from parallel versions of Earth. I mean, imagine a parallel timeline that split off 100 million years ago, where maybe the dinosaurs didn't die out and reptilian humanoids evolved in that parallel Earth, and they could cross over between these parallel realities. So there's a lot of different places where beings with this technology and these capabilities could be entering our world from, but I do believe they are physical beings, or that they can be when they want to.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, David. Now, are you going to be making any more appearances? Are you on anything, or is any kind of projects coming up you're working on?
The only thing I really expect to be doing is probably, my plan is to do Experiencers Speak, the conference in Maine. I was at the third conference in 2014, and probably I'll be doing it again in 2015. I may have other things come up, but no specific plans so far.
Well, David, I appreciate you coming on tonight. And, like I told you earlier, I'll be pretty soon I'll be on a different format, probably in a longer show, longer, better stuff on the Skype conversation. This next time we'll be face to face, you know. And but man, I appreciate, it's really cool what you do is bring in people's images. To
I want to know what they look like
and help them. What do the beads look like? But, you know, what's really awesome, too, is you're not only helping them, but you're trying to find out your own answers. And that's the even more awesome aspect about it, you know?
Yeah. It helps them to have an image. And, of course, in order to get started, I always encourage the people to try to draw it yourself. Because, you know, you may find that you can actually draw better than you think. And at the very least, I like to have that rough sketch drawn by the experiencer to kind of be a launching off point for from which I can do my own drawing of it. So I always and also that helps bring out the memory for them. So I believe it helps them to try to draw it as well as to see the drawing that I produce. And then of course it adds to my knowledge base as far as what the different varieties are. And there's all kinds of variations, but a lot of many very common elements in terms of the descriptions and the drawings as well.
Well, now, where can our audience check out some of your work? Because I'm sure they would like to check it out.
I have a sketchbook online at a website called conceptart.org. Probably the easiest way to get there is actually to go to Dahamey's Reptoids and Aliens. You just Google search that, and Dahamey is D-A-H-A-M-I, apostrophe S, Dahamey's Reptoids and Aliens, and that's the name of my sketchbook there. They can also, if they're on Facebook, they could look for Positive Reptilian Contact, which is a page that has some of my artwork, and my friend Bridget Smith and I help manage that page. And then there are there's other places you can find it. My article, the five common types of ETs and what they look like, that is at the site for that's called FREE Free, which is Foundation for Research into Extraterrestrial Encounters. And I think the link for that is just www.experiencer.co. But if that doesn't work, just you can just Google it, Foundation for Research into Extraterrestrial Encounters, and you should find it that way.
All right. Hey, David, thank you for coming on tonight. And I definitely want to see you back on. We have to talk more into this and get some more knowledge, my friend, because you sure are you sure have a lot of it. And I admire
Thanks
that.
For having me, Lauren.
Hey, no problem, David. Hey, you have a safe night, and take care of yourself, all right?
You too. Take care. Bye-bye.
And thank you, Dave. Oh, what a great show. Make sure you join us next week on Strange Rounds to Your Universe.
There's no way out of here when you come in, you're in for good. There was no promise made, the part you played, the chance you took. There are no boundaries set, the time and yet you wasted still.